We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way.
Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
Yes, it's another edition of the Roar Podcast. I think that's called a winning streak, folks. 2 days, two pods, and another one coming this weekend. I'm John Ellis. Good to be with y'all tonight on a Friday. Billy Marshall's here. He's standing by. We're going to start diving into the offseason as it relates to pro personnel decisions made. Brian Burns has been dealt. We'll break down that trade. Billy and I have not spoken since that trade or the moves that followed. And we've got a lot to dive into in terms of cap figures. The offensive line with Robert Hunt getting the big deal. Is it worth it? Does he measure up in pass protection as advertised? Damian Lewis, some grades on him. The rest of the defense got a bit of a makeover as well in terms of the edge position. Jadeveon Clowney, DJ Wonnum, Josie Jewell at middle linebacker. We'll go over who this team lost and how it could impact them coming up later this week. A deeper dive into the draft, as this is the best time of the offseason, ladies and gents. We're 1 week away from the Panthers picking 33rd and 39th. Or are we? Will they move those picks? We'll find out here in about a week. Until then, all we can do is speculate and complain and cheer on. To quote the great John Fox,
we've got it all, baby.
We saw the deepest and the highest.
The Roar starts right now.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. I am your host, Billy Marshall, joined as always by John Ellis. Been a while. John, how are you?
Yeah, man. Billy Marshall, the man, the myth, the legend. This is great. No, I'm so thrilled that we're back together. Obviously, we're coming to you just shy of 1 week away from the NFL draft. In fact, we're closer than a week. We're 6 days away from the draft. We're 7 days away from the Panthers. I would assume that'd be their first pick, unless they trade into the first round, and God, please don't do that.
I don't see it happening.
No, but it's good to be back, man. And like I told folks yesterday, we had a really good opportunity to catch up with Mina Kimes from ESPN, and that was obviously something she didn't have to do. She's got a busy schedule. She made 20 good minutes with us, and I tried to ask as many questions I knew you would want asked, and our friends here out in the audience, and you know, one of my favorite lines from her was, talking about Bryce, and a lot of people were looking at, like, the TV copy, what's going on. And he says, well, I started looking at the film, and nobody's fucking open. I was like, wait, Mina Kimes is FCC friendly. I was like, oh, boy, this is good. So we chopped it up and had fun, and she'll be back. Obviously, and the better this team gets, the more she'll be back, I'm sure. But got a lot to get to, man. Free agency's been wild, and it's kind of come and gone. And so let's dive into it.
Yeah, so we're going to kind of take a pulse here of the franchise in two different areas. First, with the pro personnel side, all the moves that they made in March that coincided free agency. And then we'll look forward to the draft in our next show. Obviously, most of you know that I am a huge draft fan, so I have plenty of thoughts that I can be prepared to share and how it relates to the Carolina Panthers. But yeah, as we do look back, I think the biggest storyline from this past March was the decision by the organization to part ways with I wouldn't say it's part ways. They traded Brian Burns, the 2019 first round pick to the New York Giants for a second round pick in this year's draft, 39th overall, and a 2025 fifth round pick. Yeah, I mean, that kind of, there was a lot of smoke heading in that direction. I just think this entire situation, it's been a culmination of a lot of circumstances, and in particular last year, just the way his contract situation was dealt with. I mean, frankly, I think, the Burns era in Carolina was, outside of the 2021, it's been a pretty missed opportunity from both the player and the organization. Just Ron Rivera had the guy working as a gunner on special teams as a rookie, and then finally he gets a competent defense for a couple years with an edge rusher and Hassan Reddick, and they were, one of the best duos in the league. And then,
But
obviously things fall apart.
still, even with that,
Yeah,
you're so right.
and so overall, like I feel like it's just been a huge collective, as Ron Rivera would like to say, coincidentally, a missed opportunity with the Brian Burns era.
Yes.
You had the option to obtain three first round, or I don't know if it was three, but definitely multiple first round picks for him last year.
At least two on the table from the Rams, at least two.
Exactly. And they didn't decide to do that. And you find yourself in this situation in 2024 where, yeah, and look, there's going to be a lot of angst and criticism directed towards the organization from whoever's on talking on the Get Up set or the Los Angeles desk. Like, how could they do this? Obviously, you and I are in tune with the organization, so we know it was a different front office that rejected the parameters of that deal. And yes, I'm certainly well aware that there are members of that front office that are currently still existing here, including the current general manager. But still, there were circumstances that took place a couple years ago that unfortunately weren't able to duplicate itself this past March. So overall, from a asset depreciation standpoint, it was pretty laughable. But in just one transaction evaluation, from just one transaction, evaluating it just from one transaction, I think it's pretty fine. I mean, Eric Eager, who works at Sumer Sports, kind of mentioned that he thought Carolina got pretty fair value for it. And, Eric isn't really afraid to criticize, bad
No,
organizations.
he's
So,
not.
I mean, John, like, as you kind of, first of all, I want to hear your thoughts on just the Brian Burns era and the overall compensation associated with it.
Yeah, Brian was a difficult case study. Because as you said, he was brought in during a time that was needless to say, turbulent. 2019 reminded me a lot of 2009 for John Fox, because there was a lot of writing on the wall with regard to where things were heading. As opposed to the year prior, 2018, the first half of that season felt almost magical. Some of the wins they were pulling off against New York, the 63-yard field goal, and then going to Philly, the defending world champs. You know the story there. They beat the living pulp out of a very good Baltimore team. They were 6-2, and they go up to Mr. Tepper's hometown with a lot of fanfare and a lot of party hats, and they got their ass whooped. And in more ways than one, the franchise quarterback pretty much is the death knell for his shoulder. And so since that moment happened, I think, Tepper had been eyeballing changes, and new owners do this. So we knew Ron was on the outs, and he got his early exit. But Brian, to that point, you're looking at a situation where did he get the most out of what he could have from a coaching and development perspective? No, I don't think so. You guys know how I feel about the decision to hire Matt Rhule, and I do think that there were some positives there, including Phil Snow, who I respect immensely and thought did a very good job adapting to the NFL game. And I just look at Brian as a guy that had a difficult time breaking through to that next threshold. And look, it's tough when you're on a team that is continually in games where the other opponent can grind you down. They have leads. You don't. And you're playing defensively defense. I mean, you're not pinning your ears back. I think the Reddick move helped free some things up there. Brown's game has emerged. But if this comes down to allocation, and if you pay Burns what his representation was after, you then lose the ability to do what you did with Derrick Brown and then look at other opportunities to maybe enhance the entire team. I think the contract he was given, I'm happy for him and his family. 5 years, $141 million, $35 in signing bonus, $35 million signing bonus, and he becomes one of the highest paid edge rushers of all time. Still not the highest paid today. I don't think I'd be comfortable for the Panthers, and I applaud Dan Morgan and his staff for at least getting something out of this instead of letting it linger more. I don't know what went into the impasse last year that should not have simmered that long. Decisions should have made sooner. They had the picks on the table from the Rams. You can't go back and undo that, but that was a major blunder. You couldn't by then possibly have not projected that Burns was not correlating to wins here. Now, that might not be fair. Brian wanted to be here. Brian loved being here, and it goes beyond his brother. And some people would argue and suggest that, well, John's a Brian Burns homer because him and Stanley are tight. That's bullshit. Stanley and I have talked openly, on and off the air, about real shit, including, hey, Brian, here's my opinion on your brother. He's got to do this a little better. Got to do that a little better. But nobody worked harder. Nobody cared more about the Panthers during this very bad time of Panther football than Brian. I think it hurt him a lot that he wasn't made a priority for his commitment there. So when it comes back to the football, I don't think I would have paid him that money. So the Giants were going to pay him that money. And that's the way it goes. I wish him all the best. It's much like DJ Moore. These are guys you don't like losing. And he had that breakout year with Steve Wilkes at the helm a couple years ago where he got double-digit sacks. He's consistently around seven sacks. Like you look at the stats, he's like one of four players in the league who's had seven-plus sacks each of the last, 5 years. But yeah, you have to be a little more higher impact in every area of that position for a team that has a ton of needs to put all that money into one basket. So with all due respect to those who think this was a bad decision, bad move, I think it was good for both sides. Brian has a chance now to work alongside, you know, Dexter Lawrence, Kayvon Thibodeau, and maybe he'll blossom now. And what you got to get out of, I think, and I won't tell anybody how to fan, but what I'm not going to do, and what I didn't do with DJ Moore and other guys, is sit around next year and frantically track how they do and say, oh, we lost a great one because he's got 16 sacks now. Everything's situational. And I think they've done a pretty good job to this point using marginally decent resources to sign some veterans to backfill and make it a more complete edge rush group. They're not close to being done yet. Burns a hell of a player, hell of a guy. I wish him the best, but Bill, I think it was time. And I do think he wanted to be here, just from what I know. But he wanted that $30 million. Yeah, that's, he wanted the max, as much as he could get. You got to get it while you can still get it. And I think the way last season started, with him and Fitter and the whole front office unable to reach a deal, he changed the number zero. There were just a lot of oddities about the way it started. He had that huge game week one, and then things get hard when you can't sustain leads as an edge rusher in this league. So I think that's just my take on it. All the best. He was a dedicated Panther. And Billy, just quickly, if I can, I don't know how this stacks up against a team like the Ravens, who I think we probably consider to be the standard bearers of drafting and developing in this league. A team that I was talking to one of our friends, Brad Spielberger, a couple weeks ago, and Brad was talking about, and congrats to Brad, by the way, he's moving on to the sport agency business, and we'll be a GM one day, I think. I think we both agree on that. Do you know how many Panthers that they've drafted since 2019 are gone now? I mean, it's insane. The best draft probably would have been, in terms of just retention, maybe 2021, because you still have guys.
2017 was pretty good.
I'm sorry, which one?
17.
Oh, I'm going, yeah, you go way back to 17. That's a good draft now. Those guys eventually do move on. The only guy still left is Moten, but they had Samuel McCaffrey. That was a very good draft. I'm not talking necessarily about the level of the draft graded. I'm talking about how many guys are now gone. And we talk about DJ Moore, yeah. Brian Burns, obviously some others have left. Jeremy Chinn now. I mean, this is a guy that was thought of as a potential high-level safety in this league, and they could never find a niche for him. You even look back at a couple years ago, Brandon Smith's gone. Matt Corral's gone. Kalon Barnes. That's going to happen. So we'll see if any of the guys from 2021 can stay as emerging guys. Horn's got to stay healthy. We'll get to that. Marshall, I don't know. Christensen, maybe he has a backup role here. Trimble, I think they like him a lot, but not as TE1. And Hubbard, I've been impressed with him for a fourth-round pick. So as for Burns, attaboy, Brian. You did your team proud, and you worked hard. You never complained. He could have made this ugly, and he didn't, but not for that money. It's just it was too steep for me if I'm the GM.
Yeah, and I think when you're discussing these trades in a vacuum, a lot of people, they just look at, like I said earlier, what you turned down, a year and a half ago. But, in evaluating these trades, the salary also has to be in consideration. So it's not like you were trading, just a second and a fifth. You're also trading for the right to pay him that contract, like you stated. And, that contract is, right behind the likes of Bosa and Watt. So it seems pretty fair for, where Brian is as an athlete, still 24 years old. I agree with you. I think he'll like it in New York. I think he'll definitely kind of feed into just, the overall culture of that organization, where they've had so many great pass rushers like Taylor to Strahan to Umanyora to JPP. Yeah. So, I'm happy for him. Like you said, I think, I was a huge fan of him prior to that draft. I had him as a top 10 player. And, the fact that he landed in Carolina was one of the more exciting moments of that draft, because Marty Herney decided to do some insane things on day two, like take Will Greer and Rashawn Golden.
And remember how we got talked down to by one of our good friends who will go unnamed, but folks can figure it out. CJ Gardner-Johnson was right there on the board, and they took crazy Greer, and we got preached to, and who's preaching now?
but I agree. So I think like you said, I think it was just a combination of a litany of factors. And look, I would have probably done the deal 2 years ago. I was on record on this podcast. You can go back and hear it. I thought it was a mistake to turn it down from the Rams. That now you're left in a situation where a lot of people feel like you have to trade them on a discount, which in reality, it's not. You're essentially got a top 40 pick, and you also have the situation where you don't have to pay him. But a player Carolina did pay was their 2020 top 10 pick, Derek Brown, the first pick in the Matt Rhule regime. And, Derek has kind of steadily improved year over year. So this was kind of, this should not have been a shocker, because, I'm glad that they did decide that they are in the business of retaining a draft pick that they pick up pretty high. And looking at the contract details, it was a 4-year, $96 million extension, $63.165 million guaranteed, of which $51.5 million is new guarantee, including a $25 million signing bonus. Mm-hmm. There are some workout bonuses associated with it, but overall, I thought this was a pretty strong and decent deal for both the team and the player. I don't think anyone here got
fleeced.
Completely handcuffed in negotiation. It's not like a couple of deals we'll get into when free agency. This seems like fair for both parties. But as far as Derek Brown goes, he had a career year last year playing Ivero's defense. From a run defense perspective, which is where he was, a huge strength of his coming out of Auburn. I mean, he's been one of the best interior run defenders in the NFL. PFF had him as the second highest run defender, interior run defender in the NFL behind Quinnen Williams, and he had 50 run stops. That actually led the entire league. 11.8% run stop per PFF. His pass rush, which was a question that I had when he came out, he finished 15th in pass rush grade amongst interior defensive.
That was impressive, Bill, because you and I talked a lot about Derek before the draft, and we both agreed based on some, three cone and just some of the explosion numbers. Testing wise, it didn't appear he was going to have too much impact there.
But I think a lot of his kind of strengths, he's still not a guy that's going to, he's not like your Aaron Donald, your Grady Jarrett that's going to slip through cracks. I think the way Ivero has managed to use his strengths as a pocket collapser and a guy that can win with, his leverage and
His ability to control blocks and just use his brute force, that helps him, and it gives other guys the opportunities to rush from, better angles. So, yeah, in my opinion, I think, certainly well deserved. It's right there, at the top of the market with some of the other interior defensive linemen who have gotten paid, like Matt Ebike, a guy I also liked a lot coming out of Texas A&M a couple years ago. But again, different players. Brown's much more of your, stout interior guy, like a more similar to a like a Dexter Lawrence. Obviously,
Yeah, a
Lawrence.
lot like Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah.
So. Matt Miller had said, and people have varying opinions about Matt's work. He's hit and miss, but he had said on draft week leading up to this that Vitavea or Brandon Williams were his comps, and I think Brown has proven to be, although Vea is an amazing player on both sides, he's a little more versatile than Williams, I think, and I liken him more to like Chris Jenkins. That's who reminds me of a lot, Chris Singer. Very similar in terms of maybe even better against the run. But that season he had last year, I mean, you got to look a little deeper with the film too, and that's the beauty of what we get to do here is get our hands on the tape early. And like, I'm just looking back at my timeline. I just searched Derrick Brown one Panther place, because I mean, we went on a heater for a while with Derrick, and there was a play back in 22, that night game, where I mean, Lindstrom is like the best guard in football maybe, and he just tosses him aside like nothing and gets a TFL. And it's consistent. Let me read you some numbers here, Billy. Derrick Brown, 2023 defensive tackle ranks, according to PFF. Total defensive snaps, 550. That was fourth among all IDLs. He had, number one, as you mentioned, run defensive snaps, 240. Pass rush snaps, he had 310. That was 12th most. He's on the field a lot. PFF grade tackling, second. PFF grade run defense, ninth. Total tackles, he was second among all those. Second in missed tackle rate with 1.6. And as you mentioned, the run stop rate, 12.4, first in the league at all those positions. So he measured up at every measure. He had some late game things that happened with a bad team that made huge impacts in games that could have been won. He sacked Baker Mayfield in that close game at the end against Tampa. He had an amazing bull rush in that first game Steve Wilks coached against the Rams. He's just every week you put on the tape, a lot like a guy that I hate we lost, Frankie Louvu, and he's doing something that wows you.
He's
And
durable too.
very durable, always available. That's what I'll say about Burns is there were times, and it's harder at edge, I think, and there was a lot of attention paid to Burns, but you need guys where you put on the tape, and every week there's something you pull away from Brown, whether it's, gap control, whether it is just taking a Pro Bowl right guard and forklifting him. Whether it's playing a little bit of three technique and looking kind of like Aaron Donald at a bigger frame for just a second, he can do just about anything you need him to at that position, and he is what you build around. I suppose it's very true what Dave and Dan had talked about in rebuilding this team. They're reshaping it from the inside out, and it reminds me, again, a little bit of how they did it back in 02 when Fox came in and tore Seifert's mess up. So I think this is a positive step with Brown. He's a great community guy as well, great locker room guy. He is quiet, but he's the kind of guy like E.F. Hutton. If he speaks, they listen, and he carries the torch now for this defense. So I'm looking forward to seeing him here for a long time.
Yeah, he's definitely the kind of quiet leader by example. I mean, like I said, you don't need, a locker. I mean, you don't need your Steve Smith and Thomas Davis and Cam Newton type alphas
No, you
running
don't.
around the locker room. I mean, I look, those guys are obviously unique in their own respect, but you also don't want to just force, don't be something you're not. And for Derrick Brown,
Exactly.
even coming out of Auburn, he's always been a pretty low key, just reserved guy, let his play do the talking. And that's exactly what you want to see. I mean, he shows emotion on the field too. I mean, he got like, I think he got ejected a couple once, I know for sure he got ejected in
Yeah.
the game. Or he's gotten some like personal flags. So he's definitely not afraid to rough it up. And I think that type of
No,
energy.
he's a son of a bitch. He'll get after it. Derrick Brown, by the way, among all defensive tackles, ends, outside linebackers. This is through December 22nd of last year. I'm looking at my timeline. He had racked up the third most combined tackles since the start of 2022, right behind Christian Wilkins and Max Crosby. He's in great company. Other names up there, DeForest Buckner, Harrison Phillips, Danielle Hunter, Dexter Lawrence. So, yeah, he's quietly doing everything they ask him to do. People are concerned about the sack numbers. That doesn't concern me because he's applying enough pressures to impact the game. And I think sacks will eventually pile up. He could have one of those K'Juan Short type of seasons, but again, that's just not who he is.
No, for sure. Yeah, like you said, I think the Chris Jenkins comp is a good one. But yeah, no, good deal for Carolina to get that done. I thought, after losing Burns, it was pretty important to at least show the effort to retain one of your, bright young spots on defense. So no issue.
Hey, give some credit to Marty Herney now. Come on, you got to give Marty a little shout out. Remember
I
that
still don't
picture?
even know if it was a Marty pick or a Matt picker.
He just got the photo op with him at the pro day just to make sure, hey, if it works out.
But moving on now, Carolina was not surprisingly very active in free agency as well, signing 14 players from outside of their roster. Well, actually, kind of less than that because a couple of these guys are retained. But they did sign quite a bit of players. We'll go through some of the high profile ones and also mention a couple notable guys that maybe caught our attention, but the top five biggest names that they signed according to their contract deals were the former guard from the Miami Dolphins, Robert Hunt, the former guard from the Seattle Seahawks, Damian Lewis, a former interior defensive lineman from the Giants, A'shaun Robinson, Jadeveon Clowney, the former edge rusher in Baltimore, and then the former linebacker in Denver, Josie Jewell. Let's kind of combine these two with Hunt and Lewis just because they present, the most expensive deals that they signed. And it also kind of aligns well with just the direction Carolina went in, targeting those two positions because let me just be clear, like with especially with Hunt, because like I think he's getting a little, I don't want to say he's getting overrated. I think he's like a decent player. Like when I say decent, like he's a functional level NFL starter and he has a potential to be, maybe in that, like he's has potential to be like in a good tier. Like he's not by any stretch of the imagination is like a blue chip guard. He's not going to be an all pro. I don't see that happening. But given where Carolina's interior offensive line was last year, that represents a pretty sizable upgrade. Now we have to see it play out because last year we were talking ourselves into this offensive line too, and for one reason or another, it didn't work out. But for the most part, Hunt is a good player. Like he, played at Louisiana with Kevin Dotson. Dotson just got a big deal with the Rams. He versatile in a lot of schemes. He played under the Shanahan McDaniel scheme in Miami for a couple of years, and prior to that, it was more mid zone and gap schemes, which is most likely going to be the formula here from a run blocking perspective. But this was a huge deal. Like I can't deny it. It was certainly a deal that struck my attention, but I think you have to also understand that Carolina is a 2-15 team. They have a lot of, I wouldn't say issues, but there are a lot of questions around the organization,
Sure, yeah.
specifically due to the owner and whatever else. So this is unfortunately the cost of doing business. So this was certainly an overpay. I do think he's an upgrade. I think he's a very talented upgrade. I think he's really good. If I'm being completely honest, I like the lowest deal much more. I've always really liked Damian Lewis as a player, even when he was coming out of LSU. Hunt, I liked him, a few years ago when he was coming out of the draft, given where he went, it was like the second or third round. But he's a good player. He's going to help this offense. The question I have is, I don't think this is New Orleans 2007 to
Seven. Yeah,
2013
I'm with
with
you.
Jarry Evans and forget the other guard they had,
Oh,
beat
they
Detroit.
forget they. Oh God, it'll come to me. It's not Eric McCoy. That's a new guy. No, I know what
No.
you mean. It's they tried to build a wall basically for a shorter quarterback, and
Yeah, and I don't think it's that because like those guys, they were both excellent like pass protectors.
yeah.
With Hunt, he's much more of a mauler, like the
Well,
kind of
Hunt
guy
here,
that
Billy, here's the thing to remember about Hunt. I mean, this is the same kind of
Carl
metrics.
Nix is the guy's name.
Oh yeah, Carl Nix, that's right. Yeah, they had some big guys there in the middle, and Hunt and Damian Lewis are two uniquely different players in terms of physical profile. As Mina Kimes mentioned yesterday, it's the funniest description I've heard of anybody ever. That Damian Lewis, according to Mina Kimes, is a human version of a fire hydrant. And I think that's he's a squatty guy, and he can get leverage and hold up, and he anchored well there. He's not ever going to be all pro, I don't think, but he's more than serviceable. And as we talked about, you pay a little bit of a tax on guys when you are 2-15 and you're recruiting them, and they're like, well, you know, sell me on you. And they're like, well, here's a couple extra million. with Hunt, like, here's what comes to mind about some of the numbers. Now, people usually go to PFF for this stuff, and I go to PFF for about 90% of what I would look at it there and say, you know, this is relevant. Some of the grades, you got to be careful here, because they did the icky thing a couple years ago where he was like the best of the week, 90 grade, and they were playing the Rams, and you and I looked at the passing chart, and about 10 of the passes were thrown behind the line of scrimmage, and the other 10 were thrown within 5 yards. So it's not a hard job to keep the quarterback clean when ball's coming right out. Tua last year, by a mile actually, led the league in average time to throw. So Hunt's getting a lot of, and again, I like him, but he's getting a lot of publicity right now from his PFF grade in the pass game. And I would just caution, based on what McDaniel does with scheme and how quickly the ball comes out and the fact that the run game is monumentally important to what they do, I would not confuse Robert Hunt for somebody who's going to be every single down just anchoring against the pass as good as anybody in the league. He's more than serviceable in that department. But I'm glad you brought this up, because I think it matters what you're in. It matters what scheme you're in. I know what's important to Dave Canales from talking to him is 2.7 seconds. He wants that ball coming out in 2.7. For Tua, it's coming out at 2.5. So, you know, if they can get close to that, Hunt is going to not miss a beat. But that's the whole thing. We don't know. I think in the run game, he'll be a great asset. And this doesn't strike me as what we call, referred to as a couple years ago, Billy, the dreaded day one of free agency, whereas Elflein and Irving and a lot of money, more than they need.
No, these guys are much better.
Much better. And I think the contracts are fair. Not with Hunt, I know the $100 million thing gets a lot of people. You got to look at what the APY is. You got to look at what the cap hit is, where you can renegotiate it. They had to do it. They had to. I mean, they had no choice last year after what they happened with the roulette with the guards. And now Corbett gets kicked inside the center. You know, that's the reporting now. And that's where we get our draft discussion coming up here next time around here this weekend, Billy. That's dicey. That's risky. I like Austin, but he's coming off the leg. I'm not certain that's going to be what we see week one. I still don't buy that's what their plan is.
Extremely fluid.
Yes, I agree. But I like Hunt. And Lewis, look, he's a guy back when you and I started doing work together. I think he was in that 2020 draft class from LSU. And in one of my mocks I did, I think two of them, my final one, I had him going to us in like the third round. And he's a guy I hate they missed on, but here he is. So the nature of the NFL is full circle. And hopefully they both stay healthy. And let's start there. Just give us some good health for a year with these two guys. They got lucky 2 years ago. Carolina almost had nothing injured on that line. And then when you start losing guys, you got a rookie quarterback who relies on, you know, timing and anticipation, and it's all coming from the inside when you're 5'10". Shit, man. They had to pay these guys.
Yeah, I mean, he did miss time last year. He did allow one sack, total only 5 pressures allowed. Now,
he missed 5 games. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so again, I think this is something they had to do. They had to upgrade the offensive line. And I also think here, this is an important point. Like, you know, for all of our talk about kind of keeping the quarterback upright, you know, there is going to be, I mean, the head coach has mentioned he definitely wants to establish the run, for better or worse.
Year in Tampa.
So I definitely think that these two additions are very good cogs in that department. I mean, they will get downhill and, you know, create alleys for you in the run game. They will reach their landmarks. They know how to create leverage and angles in the run game to support the running back and the run concepts. So I have zero. What I'm trying to say here is, like, I don't think this is just, in a sense, like what I was saying earlier, like this isn't the mid 2000 Saints with their offensive line, where it's mostly their, you know, 70-30 throwing a team, because,
yeah,
you know, Breeze at that point had a lot more stature as a quarterback, just because, I mean, he won a Super Bowl and was also pretty good in San Diego. So right. This one, in my opinion, is not only to just support the quarterback, but also the run game. So from that standpoint, you had to overpay. So it's understandable. I mean, all the grades you're going to see and hear from the kind of the post hoc analysis as a result of the move, it's going to be kind of directed in one direction. But hey, it's just the price of doing business.
Yeah, the minute he gives up a sack, and it's going to happen because, look, this is a unit that has to work in harmony. And this is so unfair sometimes the way we give individual grades out to offensive linemen because, I trust the guys at PFF. They have a lot of guys that know a lot about football, and that's fine. But it's a really hard position group on an individual basis to grade every single snap because – I've heard guys like Schwartz and others talk about this, and even Baldinger. It's like, dude, don't even – if you haven't played it, let's be real careful to go too deep in terms of analysis. And only that to say that, we know enough about what we're looking at on tape to know what's what and what is probably more of something that we don't understand in terms of scheme, protection calls. Hunt will probably give up a sack at some point, and what fans need to probably do, although it's your prerogative, guys – is not freak out over the $100 million number. It is what it is, as long as the total product is making the team better. Kind of like when they signed Mike Wall, remember back in 2005. Kind of reminds me of that.
He's a good player.
Yeah, good player. And, hopefully this will help stabilize things and kind of help reveal the unknown about Bryce. Is it a finished product? Are we going to see some improvements here when things settle into the pocket? Will the pocket settle? It's certainly something they had to do to solidify because – I still didn't think Christensen was that great 2 years ago at left guard. And
he wasn't.
Corbett being hurt really is a big concern. That's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I also believe that this kind of just allows you to build out your depth. So guys like Corbett and Christensen could be, instead of relied upon to start, it kind of raises your floor in some respects.
Yep.
Okay, now moving on to defense. Kind of want to take these into a group these together here because, after signing or excuse me, trading Burns, they certainly had a massive hole at edge rusher and they decided to, bring in two former Gamecocks and DJ Wonnum and Jadeveon Clowney. Wonnum had a really productive year last year for the Vikings playing under Flores' defense, which, is pretty unique in its own right. He did actually have, from just his pro football focus standpoint, his highest graded year, but it was still kind of, I wouldn't say it's smoke and mirrors. He has pretty good length and he's a much more straight line type of athlete. He just is not really going to bring like a lot of twitch, but he can definitely set an edge. I mean, with that length, he's not going to win with, a lot of creativity in his hand movement and his hand fighting. And that's kind of always been the MO with him coming out of South Carolina, where he was a day three pick and, it ended up being a good pick for the Vikings and for him too. I mean, he ended up getting a pretty nice deal here. Carolina was able to kind of attract him. And obviously Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, that was one of the bigger moves that they made this entire offseason as well.
They finally did it. We've been talking about Clowney to Carolina like we used to talk about Bill Cowher to Carolina, and finally, for better or worse, it happened. Yeah.
2 years, $20 million, $8 million signing bonus, $12 million guaranteed. Really good deal. I just think like
– excellent deal.
I mean, if you're actually going to ask me right now, like Clowney and Wonnum plus 39th pick – for what is that like your cap, your 32 and a half million,
I was gonna say,
35.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think Carolina did all right in that respect, but
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Clowney had it was kind of crazy. He's been signing every year, like in August, right before training camp.
It was stunning. I mean, I was talking to some of the guys that cover the team up there, like Mike Kay, and it was like he had the day off, and I was actually on the air when it happened. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, because I was like you. We talked about this, you and I did, in terms of what could be up the pipeline here. And you're right. He's an old head that likes to wait out and kind of just take a summer off and work on his own, and then somebody needs somebody. Yeah, I'm right here. Give me a call. But, no, he clearly wanted to get in the building early, and I think that's a positive sign. His cap hit, as you mentioned this year, is $6 million, and Wonnum's is 4 and a quarter, so that's 10. So perhaps now Burns – who last year was carrying the load by himself as the edge rusher of choice for this team. Not to say that Wonnum can replicate that production last year, because three of those sacks, it was in one game, and he had a fumble return against us, and, you know, that's certainly impressive, but I do like the idea of having a little more balance there instead of, okay, Burns got the mega payday. We got to pay Brown, too. Now, who the hell is going to rush the passer? Because DJ Johnson doesn't look to be it at this point, and obviously YGM, for all he did well as a niche three-tech guy, is no longer here.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised he got that deal.
Yeah, me too. No, I like the deal for Clowney. I do. And I liked what he did last year in Baltimore. I mean, look, I try to go back. He was 30 years old, 31 now, and you know, those weren't empty numbers. I mean, he was earning some of these sacks, earning those pressures, and he was rotational. And he can hit the edge on the run too. I mean, this is the big thing you got to remember with Wonnum, with his size and length you mentioned. It's just as much about run set as it is, you know, terrorizing the quarterback. And that's something for years, Billy, you and I have been frustrated with this team, that they consistently find a way to get hit in the run on the edge on the wide zone stuff, and this will help with that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think both guys bring an element of physicality. I mean, you couple that up with a guy like A'shaun Robinson that they signed. I mean, they've certainly raised their floor and their ceiling tremendously from a run defense standpoint. And, you know, with this Evero/Fangio defense, one of the biggest weaknesses of the scheme is just, you know, allowing teams to run the ball in light boxes. So now you're loading up on guys that are, you know, that we know are good run defenders. You know, that helps improve your overall run defense. And that gives them, at least the defense, an opportunity to, you know, rush the passer. Now, I still have plenty of questions about that part of their game, because Wonnum, like I said, you know, playing that Flores defense and the production he was able to, kind of accumulate, I'm not saying it's smoke and mirrors, but it's much different than, you know, the type of defense that Evero runs. But to his credit, Evero, he's pretty creative in his own respect. You know, not like Flores, it's a completely different defense and terminology and scheme, but just the way he's able to create blitzing and opportunities for free rushers. And that brings us, like I said, a couple other guys, Josie Jewell. Jewell and A'shaun Robinson were a little of the, I wouldn't say it was a bad deal. I mean, Jewell played for Evero in Denver for a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he played for Fangio prior to that, so he has plenty of experience with the defense. I did think a little bit overpaid, but I mean, they also lost Luvu to Washington.
Yeah, that one I thought hurt, but that was going to cost you. And we
he wanted to play with Dan Quinn.
Yeah, I don't blame it. Luvu is going to be fantastic with Quinn. What Quinn does with guys like that, sort of like Micah, I'm not saying they're the same, but boy, there's some things to untap with Frankie, and he could end up becoming even better than we've seen him here.
Yeah, for sure. Chin, too, I thought it was interesting. They took two guys from our defense. Yeah. But with Jewell, I mean, solid player. Like, he's like just a very solid NFL linebacker. You know, he reminds me a little bit of the guy they drafted in 2013, A.J. Klein. You know, he has just a very solid, dependable, you know, high floor. He's not going to necessarily be in the wrong spots, but you might want a little more from him, you know, with the game-changing plays, you know, the ability to, you know, flip your hips and match a guy in coverage. And it's probably, you know, for us fans here in Carolina, where we've watched elite linebackers for the better part of, you know, the franchise's existence with Keekly, Davis, Beeson, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, he's not exactly that. He's just more, like I said, an A.J. Klein type. High floor, knows where to be in the right place, the right position. You know, A.J. Klein kind of followed McDermott around for a few years. And with Jewell, it's kind of similar in the fact that, you know, he played with Fangio and then he played a season with Evero, so it's kind of just continuing on playing for him. Like I said, the contract, it is what it is. And A'shaun Robinson, I was a little, this one kind of caught my eye initially, but then I saw some of these other interior, like defensive linemen, run stuffers that, I mean, the Cardinals were giving them these type of similar deals that were like somewhere around $7 million a year.
Yeah.
So eventually I was like, okay, well, that seems to be the market. So
the market blew up at defensive tackle the last 24 months with, not just Brown, but, you know, Wilkins. I mean, a lot of them. Who else got paid? Dexter got paid. Quinnen Williams, they're all just making bank right now. DJ Reader left to go to Detroit, I think. And, yes, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, you look at what they're paying right now for Jewel in terms of just backers. Now you got to really kind of go down to the inside backer. And I've got some thoughts on linebacker I want to share with you in a minute because I think a lot of people are kind of sleeping on the importance of maybe what's up with that position group maybe a year or two from now. But he's being paid in line right now, you know, on average with, you know, guys like Drew Tranquil, Singleton, Quincy Williams, Cole Holcomb, at least in terms of cap hit, inside backers like Caden Ellis, Blake Cashman. So, I mean, look, it's not the worst deal. And the same for Robinson. And I'm with you on Jewel. People need to understand, like, he might become a fan favorite because, you know, he's got some personality to him. He's a throwback type of player. He's played with Evero, and I think that's what matters the most. He's familiar with the calls, the system, and they had to have a body in there that started some games after losing Luvu. So that's fine. Shaq Thompson's coming back, it looks like. And, you know, I'm just going to tell you right now, this is something with two very good inside linebackers in that second-round range, and they could trade back to maybe still get one. And I'm talking about Wilson and Cooper. Those are my two faves in that range. I wouldn't ignore it. I'm telling you, because even Dan Morgan talked about this in the presser. You know, they're trying to look ahead to some positions here that might look okay now, although I wouldn't say it's great. But, boy, you know, Shaq, if he doesn't come back and surface as a player that's remotely close to what he was 2 or 3 years ago, look out, because they are very thin right there, very thin, and they're getting older.
I agree. I definitely think we'll get into draft discussion tomorrow. I think a couple guys that wouldn't be shocked. Sandra Still, the corner from Michigan, and Cooper, the linebacker from A&M. I mean, like I said, we'll get into a discussion.
Those guys can cover. Those guys are two of the best coverage guys in the position. I love them both.
Sandra Still, yes. Cooper, a little more of a projection, but he's certainly athletic. I'll give him that much. Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, like, outside of that, John, I mean, they did make some other, like, you know, more marginal moves, but like Dane Jackson, Jordan Fuller, Nick Scott, you know, Fuller and Scott played for Evero, in Los Angeles.
There's a theme here.
Yeah, no, it's good that they did this, yeah, just because of the fact that, you know, it shows that, you know, that Evero is a valued member of this coaching staff. You know, when you trade a guy like Brian Burns, that kind of gives him some trust. I mean, then there were you know, I don't know what to believe about, you know, some of those reports about not letting him, you know, go interview elsewhere. So, you know, I think they showed pretty decent amount of faith in bringing in players that he's familiar with. You know, Dane Jackson, you know, he's a very solid corner. He played in Buffalo for the past couple of years. But, you know, one guy I do want to bring up here that, you know, they signed Yosh Nijman, you know, formerly with the Packers.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's played actually quite a decent amount of games for Green Bay. He's kind of been their reserve tackle. I've always really liked him, and Green Bay has a pretty long history of just producing some of these under the radar, like dependable, solid tackles that just whenever you need them in a pinch, like they can come in and do a job. And if you actually go back to his pre-draft workout, he was undrafted, but he ran a 4.88 40. Mm-hmm. Short shuttle was 4.50. Three cone was 7.29. And mind you, he's 324 pounds, 6'6", 34 inch arms. Now, this is essentially the new Cam Irving. Like, he's their backup swing tackle.
Swing tackle, yeah. Plays both sides too, which helps.
Exactly. I mean, Moten, I mean, he never misses a game. And look, fair and unfair, John. I mean, Equano, this is, I'm not going to say it's a make or break year, but it's certainly a year that he's going to be put under a microscope.
No, you don't have to sugarcoat it. It's huge. And that this is the nature of the business. It hasn't been. And the same can be said about Evan Neal with the Giants. I mean, all these tackles that were taken, you assume that, okay, boom, it's a lock. And it's just not that way in the NFL. And I still say that this is what our friend that scouted these guys for the Panthers for a decade plus told us. And I stand by it that, you know, the conversations they had in the draft room and that leading up to when they were pretty locked in on Ike Ekwonu was, look, we'll give it a little time, undisclosed time, and if it's just not right, we feel very confident that we can just move him to left guard and he can become high level. And I believe that's where he truly belongs. But I don't think it's time yet. But I think a signing like Nyman, look, 22 starts. And I looked at some tape on him when Aaron Rodgers was still there, so I'm assuming this is a couple years ago. He had two very good games against the Cowboys, and that's, you know, not an easy task against guys like Lawrence. He was hitting Lawrence a lot and holding his own, and then Parsons was running around and didn't get the best of him too much. And then against the Rams, he held up nicely at times against Aaron Donald one-on-one, and he was doing a good job holding up protection there. So this is not just a body. This is a guy that, you know, I'm sure had some offers. He's 6'7". He actually blocked a field goal on special teams, so he can do that for you. Yeah, I think this is a really cool gadget signing for this team that can pay dividends, and it gives them the depth that can make you breathe easier a little bit, because Ekwonu needs to play well this year. He's going to be asked to do different things, and it's a new system, and we don't know what that looks and feels like. And look, I know Dave Canales wants the ball out in 2.5 seconds. I know he does, but I don't know if it can be that way right off the bat, so be ready to hold up.
Yep. Any thoughts on some of the other guys that they signed, John?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a trade that went down, and I want to touch on this with you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, good call.
Deontay and Dante Jackson, obviously. And I'm just going to tell you, you know, without getting too deep into the weeds on.
Yeah, I do think we should spend a couple minutes on this. I'm completely brain fart.
Well,
yeah.
Now, I was looking at the same list you were, and this is all free agent stuff, and it just occurred to me. I went to our positional chart here in terms of depth, and I saw Johnson. I said, oh, yeah, there's that guy that actually knows how to separate.
Deontay Johnson.
He's much different than what we saw last year.
Deontay Johnson was traded to the Panthers from the Steelers, and in return, Carolina gave up Dante Jackson.
Who was going to leave, by the way, anyway. I thought it was actually a pretty good move by Carolina.
Yeah, no, this was a really good deal for Carolina, just because, I really wasn't impressed with the free agent wide receivers, and I still think like the best route for Carolina is to not only double dip at wide receiver in this draft, but even triple dip potentially, like get, you know, a guy or two in day three. But with all that said, like I said, we'll leave the draft discussion for our next show. You know, Deontay is just, he's a guy that knows how to get open. He is just, he has the nuances to his game. He understands route leverage. I mean, within 1.5 seconds, I mean, his footwork is just fantastic. You know, the way he's able to sink and quickly create himself as an open target in the short and intermediate game, which is going to be a pretty huge hallmark, not only of what the quarterback needs, but also just about the offense, and then his ability to win on the, you know, with those outside releases and present himself as a vertical threat. Potentially he can stack receivers, you know. Now, why was he available? Now that's, you know, the age old question, but again,
hey,
doesn't really take too much to know
Steelers
that there were
guys,
some,
there
were some situations in the locker room.
There were. And here's my response to that. When you're 2-15, there's not much else to poison in terms of the well. So, look, whatever problems existed there, okay, we'll gladly accept that that risk, and we'll hope that, you know, 90 catches for maybe 1,200 yards and just the ability to separate like a normal top-line receiver is worth the risk. I don't think anything that he's done there in Pittsburgh warrants being overly alarmed, but yeah, you're gonna have to manage it.
No, I agree. I just think, like, you have to understand Pittsburgh is a very unique space.
Yes, it is.
You know, Pickens is obviously an alpha personality himself.
Yep.
You know, the quarterback situation wasn't good there. It was just time maybe for a fresh start.
Yep.
You know, I'm watching, you know, some of his, I saw some pictures of him training with Bryce. They seem to be in pretty good spirits, like on doing the offseason workouts. You know, Mike Tomlin thinks that, you know, when he, you know, spoke with the trade at the league meetings, he just felt that, you know, he's getting an awesome, I mean, this is directly from Tomlin. It's like, you're getting an awesome route runner. I mean, the guy that can create separation at the top of routes, a guy that's tough to stay with. He can win a non-vertical route running and vertical route running, which is what I said. So you get a guy with a complete skill set in that regard. I just think it's going to be a big asset to them. He wants the football, but I think they all do. So again, cherry picking that, Pickens, he wants the football. It's no surprise. I mean, George Pickens is an alpha personality. Like I said, the quarterback situation was in flux. Their first-round quarterback a couple years ago was demanding a trade. There's a lot of speculation. This isn't a Steelers podcast. I don't know what is going on there.
Thank God it's not.
But for Deontay specifically, I think that this is good just because, you know, he's in an environment now where at this moment, the wide receiver room does not look great. But again, there's a draft that's going to be here in a week. So things can change very quickly. But as it stands right now, I think like Mingo, Thielen, and Deontay, it's something. And
oh yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I think, you know, Deontay, just, you know, the time I've had to study his game a little bit from last year, and one play that comes to mind we saw live in that season finale is, you know, when they had Mason Rudolph in, it was a 5-yard, you know, dig or slant or whatever the hell they called, and Deontay was able to catch it and split the safeties and go to the house, and you get some of that. There's a lot of good rack. He's good against man, and he's really good, I think, against zone. He might be even better against zone, just kind of feeling out, much like Greg Olsen used to at the tight end position, those holes in the zone coverage, and he's savvy. He really is. And that goes in line. I think Bryce came into this last year, and no disrespect to anybody other than Thielen, who still can hold his own at his age for what he does. Bryce had to be looking around quietly like, okay, geez, I mean, what do we do here? It's like Mina talked about it yesterday. Like, there's times where you're looking around and there's nothing available. Yeah, there will be something available with Deontay's ability to find some sense of separation. Maybe not the best in the league, but again, he's very good, very balanced in terms of how he attacks man coverage and in zones as well. I saw him do some very good things last year. He just knows how to play the anticipation game with a guy like Bryce. I like it a lot.
And Thielen's more restricted, in my opinion, to the slot at this stage of his career.
Totally, totally.
So I don't think you're necessarily stepping on skill sets. I think you needed a guy on the outside that could win as a route runner.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if you have the opportunity to search for, you know, the ball winner, there were rumors that they had meetings with Mike Williams before he signed with the Jets. I think there was something about Gallup as well. I don't know if he's signed anywhere.
I haven't heard anything lately, but like the T. Higgins thing, are you still, where are you at?
Would you package
something for him, or would you steer away?
I think Carolina has made it very clear that they're going to be looking towards this draft, and they're not going to be in the market for veteran upgrades with their.
I'm a Clemson guy, but picks. There's something about the flavor of that move. I guess it's because we've made too many of these types of trades. I think it's just time to stop bundling assets for veterans that may or may not work out. I love T, great player, but he's had the benefit of playing alongside of Chase and Boyd, and Burrow's acumen helps him too. So I don't think that's going to be a great situation. I don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And again, I think Jonathan Jones reported that Carolina is looking to build through the draft, which is...
That works.
That works for me.
Yeah, let's stop doing that once.
And I don't think they're going to be doing nonsensical things like trading up in the first round. I do not see that happening.
That can't happen. No, I mean, there's no need.
I think there's a better chance they trade down from 33.
I think they're going to trade one of those two back. I really do. Now, it could be 33. I think maybe given the fact that you mentioned what they're possibly in the market for, well, definitely in the market for, but they might not be drafting hungry. They might draft PPA. Who knows? But they got to get a receiver, one of those two picks.
I don't think they're that.
I think one's moving back. And you look at the draft trade charts, you can get yourself a pretty decent haul for, you know, moving 33 out and getting yourself a couple of day two picks there.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, no, we'll get into the draft. But I'm glad we touched on, you know, the Deontay trade. I definitely like that quite a bit for Carolina. So, John, any final parting thoughts?
No, man. Great to be back with you. Obviously, you know, you guys have been very supportive of this podcast, and you know, Billy and I are excited to be back on a schedule that I think you'll appreciate a little more. Again, it's going to get the summer months are coming around, and there will be some times I think we take a breather here. Before camp, but you know, this is draft season, so we got a lot to get to. We'll have pre-draft shows coming up next week, maybe a guest or two, and then post-draft, it'll just be crazy. I mean, probably like daily updates like I did last year, just on who we drafted, what the players look like, and training camp. Billy, it's in Charlotte this year. It's gonna be harder for me, but I still plan on being there. It's exciting, as it is every time this year. There's a lot of hope, but last thing I'll say is, you know, I keep talking about that 2001-2002 Panthers transition, and this is very encouraging that their free agency choices have been on the prudent side, I think, and they have not done one move that I look at and say, damn, that can cost them big. They've been smart, they've been patient, and I think in this upcoming draft, hopefully this can be the year where they find maybe Other teams have done this too. Two or three guys that they can lean on for the next 5-10 years. That's what you're looking for.
Yep, and we will get you guys another draft show, or excuse me, another show focused on the draft and kind of our thoughts on the strategic, you know, kind of decisions that they could look towards, and some scouting reports of players of need that would concern the Carolina Panthers. But like John said, thank you guys for following, and we'll talk to you guys next time.